Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, how you doing out there? It's Eric Olson, publisher of Blog Critics. Hope you are well. We have finally warmed up. Today's the first day. Man, it's been cool. Even on our trip down in Nashville over the weekend, it was warm at the beginning of the trip, and then it cooled way off, way down to the 50s, if you can believe that. Here we are in late May. Anyway, it's warm here in greater Cleveland, Ohio today. Beautiful, sunshiny day. Everything is looking summery and smoking hot and cool. So thanks for joining us. We are here every single Wednesday from 6 to 7 Eastern. It's BC Radio Live. Well, like I said, we were gone. We were gone actually from Friday through Monday and ended up being gone a little bit longer because the trip back took longer than the trip down and all that usual good stuff. Went down to see some college roommates of mine, some of whom I haven't seen in 30 years. It was an amazing thing. We got along super well. No one had changed particularly all that much. Everyone's doing pretty well. Having reasonably good lives at the, in theory, halfway point. We're all 50-ish, shall we say. Other than Dawn, of course, who is younger than that. And speaking of whom, Dawn will be joining us here in the first half hour. In fact, let's bring her in now. Okay, yep, there she is. All right, so Dawn and I are going to chat because, man, we spent a lot of time in the car and we were hanging out and she ignored me on the way back reading her stupid book. So we'll talk about that, what we did down in Nashville, some of the TV stuff that we, some of the shows that are wrapping up that we watch. We only watch a handful. And also, of course, Dawn is the publisher and editor of Glosslip.com, which is a preeminent celebrity news and gossip site. So she'll be filling us in on what's going on there. At 6:30, Lisa McKay, Philip Wynn will be joining us, and we'll be speaking with Blog Critics writer Lisa Gus, a.k.a. known on Blog Critics as Assy Cat, A-S-I-C-A-T. You'd recognize her nom de Blog Critics. And she is a producer on an interesting website slash forthcoming TV show called Lombardi Street. So, Dawn, how are you doing?
Good. I am wonderful, and I don't think I can top that intro. It was phantasmagorical.
I know. I never took a breath. I never
you
stopped.
You did not.
I just rock it on out.
I was lulled into a sense of calm and well-being listening to you yammer on and on as I'm sitting out in our beautiful deck area enjoying this beautiful, sunny summerish day here in our lovely land of Cleveland. And as we noted on our trip down, there's only 66 days of which we get to enjoy weather like this in the entire year here in Cleveland. So you got to soak it in while you can.
Yeah, that's not a super great percentage. That's one in six, I guess, is what about the what under 20% of the day. I'm still wondering if that. It just sounds low to me because, I mean, there's no question that we have seen a difference, a change in the weather, just more extremes, but overall certainly trending toward warmer and drier overall. You know, over the last, I've been back here almost 20 years, and so I came back in 90, and I was gone all through the 80s, visited, but, you know, didn't live here in the 80s, and boy, the difference from when I lived here and went to high school and college in the 70s to the last 20 years, especially the last 10 years or so, is really notable. I mean, we had it when we lived in the 70s, we lived in Chagrin Falls. We had a big pond in our backyard, small lake, big pond. Every winter, it froze, and it froze pretty deep, significantly enough that we ice skated on it. The whole neighborhood would go out and ice skate. Much of the winter, or at least some of the winter anyway, and, you know, we just aren't seeing that kind of sustained cold typically here in the winters. That doesn't mean it doesn't get cold. We have some super cold days, some, you know, abnormally cold days, but overall, we just don't have that sustained cold, and it really does seem like we have less overcast and less precipitation. Although I wouldn't bet on that's purely anecdotal. But I saw some statistics that over the last 20 years or so, you know, the average temperature for this area is up, I don't know, something like 2 or 3 degrees, and that's a lot. That is a big change in a relatively short period of time. So anyway, I'm wondering if those 66 days still hold, or if we're squeezing a few more out. But I'm telling you, if we stick around here long enough, you know, the North Coast is going to be a vacation wonderland, what with global warming and all. But it may take a while, but we can handle it. So anyway, yeah, it's very interesting, strange weather. We were looking at the maps because, you know, what do you do when you're driving? And we had the Atlas open, and I was sort of aware that you don't have to go that far south to see really pretty notably different weather, but it was borne out graphically looking at these weather maps that even just as far south as Columbus, which is only maybe 120 miles maybe south of here, very different weather patterns. And by the time you get down to Cincinnati, which is about 200 miles, you know, it's in a different weather system, and of course you don't have the lake and the various modifying that it does. It keeps you cooler in the leading into the summer, and it keeps you warmer leading into the winter as things are cooling down, being a large body of water. But anyway, really interesting. And of course, by the time you're all the way down to Nashville, which is 500 miles, we found that out, 500 miles, then you're in a whole different world there as far as weather goes. But what was really interesting driving back was the weather really never changed all the way from Nashville to here. It was about the same temperature. This was Monday. It was, you know, mid-60s and sunny the whole way. So that is a large swath of territory to have the same temperature in, I would say. So it would be fun at some point. We've already blabbed a little bit about it. Talk about the Nashville trip and some of the things we observed. We did the touristy stuff and hung around right down on Broadway, right there in the main drag of Nashville, and went into the various bars and honky tonks and. Had an interesting time. But before we do that, why don't we attend to more general newsy kinds of stuff and tell us what's up over at Glosslyn.
Well, a variety of things in general. I was just reading a blind item piece that I know I haven't written about, but I noticed a couple weeks ago, and for those of us who cover Scientology, and there's a handful of sites that do that, there's rumors abounding that Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes, of course this has been going on for some time now, that Katie has finally filed for divorce, dissolution of marriage for whatever reason, and it was a blind item. Now, I don't know if your audience is familiar with blind items. They basically are, they give you enough hints that if you follow the tabloids, you can figure out who it is. But they won't come straight out and say it because it's not confirmed. So this story seems to have legs, and no one would be surprised if the two of them broke up. So I don't usually comment on blind items because we're a reputable source, and you know we like to keep it in the basis of reality. But I'm pretty excited about that. Not that you ever want to hear about people getting divorced, but we all know that Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes were a relationship made in hell. So it's only and it's a contract marriage. It's only a matter of time before, you know, the novelty wears off. And the other ones were, you know, sort of silly items about, I was making fun of Brad Pitt. I'm not a big fan of Brad Pitt. I just had a conversation, in fact, with a good friend of ours about Brad Pitt, and they said the same thing that everyone says, but doesn't he give to charity? Doesn't that make him a wonderful person? And, you know, what I like to say about that is if you have to go around telling everybody how much you give to charity, chances are you're probably not giving as much as you could or should, and does it make up for the fact that you do lots of other not-so-nice things? And we won't get into all this detail. So I like to make fun of Brad Pitt because we're not a butt-kissing celebrity kind of site. We like to skewer them and put them under the spotlight and kind of poke all the holes and all the things that they try and generate in the media world to make us think they're the greatest things ever, and I just don't buy that because I live in the real world, and like you do, and no one's perfect, and I don't buy it if people are trying to create a situation where someone, where I'm supposed to believe that that person's perfect. Speaking of people not being perfect, then there was the story of John Mayer, who is, you know, he's like the king of Twitter. He was a Twitterer before there was such a thing as Twittering, because he has a blog, and he likes to blab on his blog about anything and everything that pops into his pea little brain. In this case, he was waxing poetic about why everybody thinks he's a D-bag. That's douchebag for those who don't follow my little Dawnism. And he said that the reason people don't like him is because they're jealous. They're upset that he has dated their fantasy girl. Just to remind everyone, here's who he has dated publicly. And he only dates famous girls, apparently. He's dated Cameron Diaz. He has dated Jennifer Aniston most famously and most recently. He has dated Jessica Simpson and Jennifer Love Hewitt. There's even a rumor that his famous song, Wonderland, as in Your Body is a Wonderland, was about Jennifer Love Hewitt. In true John Mayer form, he's let everyone know that, no, in fact, it was not about her. And he's kind of got a reputation for dishing on girls after he breaks up with them. So it was just a little snippet into his oversized ego, and I had to point out to him that the reason people don't like him and think he's a D-bag is, well, because he is one. So there's your celebrity news for the day.
Well, it's not very gentlemanly to
to
let it be known one way or another that you only date famous women. I mean, what does that mean? Does that mean that there are no other interesting, appealing, attractive, intelligent, charismatic women who just don't happen to be household names? Does it mean that, or does it mean that this is some sort of ego thing for him?
Well, anyone who's followed his career as a, you know, interesting and talented singer who wrote, you know, some interesting melodic songs to this
and
a very good guitarist, and, you know, he's a good songwriter, but he's certainly not as great as he thinks he is, have seen him morph into, you know, a certain musicians. Generally, I don't pick on musicians nearly as much because they tend to take themselves and their careers a little bit more seriously than, say, you know, famous people who are famous either for acting or just being famous, like a Paris Hilton type person, because they actually have to have a craft. Not to say that people who act don't have a craft, but, you know, we know a lot of people in Hollywood have their job simply because they're attractive, not necessarily because they are the most talented person. And, well, anyone could be born attractive, but it takes talent to, you know, learn an instrument, write songs, create melodies. I mean, that to me is something that I respect. So he went from being a fairly respected guy to being kind of this person who uses his fame to date these women and then dish on them. And he sort of has a reputation of being a, well, we call it fame whore, but he's sort of a man whore where he will only date generally famous women because he likes to see his name in the tabloids. And, you know, it's especially appealing to him on that level to hear people talk about him. So it's kind of, it makes me sad to see somebody who did have a lot of promise. He's still a young guy. He's only, you know, in his early 30s. Go from being a respected person to being a fairly disrespectful to his talent and to those around him. I don't feel every famous person does what they do because they have an absolute need to see their name in life. I think some people just, you know, they enjoy acting. And so, you know, I don't give him a free pass because he may or may not have musical talent. He's, you know, he's like every other famous person who can't stand to be out of the spotlight. And for that, he gets a front page skewering there on Glossolalia.
That. All right. Well, that is all interesting stuff. Brad Pitt, I like Brad Pitt relatively often as an actor. Still haven't seen the latest one, the one that had a number of Academy Award nominations. But I don't know, did it win anything?
No, I don't believe it. I mean, maybe it won for makeup or something, but any of the big ones that it was nominated for, it did not win. Much to my joy. And I have a theory on that, Eric. I am convinced, and I could be wrong, it could always be proven wrong, that Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, who have both been nominated several times, including Angelina this past time for, I can't think of the name of the movie, the one where she's the mother whose son is kidnapped and...
Changeling.
Yes, the Changeling. She was nominated for that. I am convinced that neither Brad Pitt nor Angelina Jolie will win an Oscar until they either, A, come clean about the nature of their relationship, which is just, you know, fraught with tabloid speculation, or they break up. I think they're being punished, and I have to applaud Hollywood and the powers that be for doing so, because I don't think you want to encourage that kind of behavior in the general public. And we know that, you know, Hollywood sets the tone for our pop culture. And when you see people having, you know, tons of children out of wedlock, or, you know, taking marriage not seriously, like Brad Pitt obviously did, and infidelities, I think that, you know, you shouldn't be rewarded for that. I know Hollywood, it's fairly common practice, but I think what makes Brad and Angelina Jolie's situation so different is because they lied about it, and they got caught in that lie, and they continue to try and paint this picture of, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, it's doing that thing again where it tells you you're not on the host queue. I'm just going to ignore that and keep on blabbing.
Good.
And, you know, I just don't feel that it's right to encourage that sort of behavior, and we certainly shouldn't be rewarding that behavior. And, you know, lying about it makes it even worse. You might as well just be like, you know, Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, and just be like, yeah, we're total whores, man. We just couldn't contain our, you know, salacious feelings, and we had to just jump each other. And, yeah, Brad was married, but when has being married ever stopped anybody before? And just get over it, people. And then I think people would respect them, at least for being honest. But they've been very deceptive and used their humanitarian efforts to sort of deflect from the criticism for how their relationship came to being. Because, you know, it wasn't like he just dumped anybody. He, you know, he dumped another famous person. He did it in a very callous way. And he sort of they've been throwing Jennifer Aniston, who I'm not a fan of, under the bus for some time. And, you know, people don't like that. Real people don't like that. But trust me, there's plenty of Brangeloonies out there who think that the heavens and earth only move on Angelina Jolie's menstrual cycle. So there you go.
All righty. Well, that was an interesting analogy. I like that. All right. So anyway, the movie we were talking about is The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. And, wow, a whole bunch of Academy Award nominations. It did win three. It won... You're basically correct. It won Best Achievement in Art Direction. It won Best Achievement in Makeup and Best Achievement in Visual Effects. So everything but the visual team got shut out, although it did have a ton of nominations, including director, David Fincher, editing.
And Brad Pitt for Best Actor.
Right, on and on and on. And ultimately, writing, actress. Supporting actress, and Brad Pitt for leading actor, but he did not win. And you know, I think your theory may have a fair amount of. I don't think it's not like people.
It's not waterproof.
It's not that people collude on these things. It's
right.
Just that it's sort of the general zeitgeist that. Man, there's a layer of phoniness to that couple, and they are smug as hell. And,
oh, so smug.
You know, I mean, they just kept showing them. You know, I mean, we watched the Oscars. Man, have two people looked more smug in their lives? And then, you know, they couldn't be bothered. They were irritated, of course, and we got better things to do. Let's move on. When they didn't win. And I think you're right. I think their efforts, and they're both, I think, quite talented. I think Brad Pitt started off pretty much just kind of a pretty boy, but I think he certainly has chosen a lot of interesting roles, his most, you know, recognized roles have been, you know, oddballs, and he does oddballs quite well. I mean,
he was great in Snatch.
And 12 Monkeys? My God.
Yep.
Most peculiar in that. I think he was nominated for that, too.
He's had a lot of flops, too. I mean, not such great performances. And same with Angelina Jolie. I mean, obviously, she's won an Oscar. She is a very talented actress. But when she's not in an element that's believable, I think she falls flat. I mean, even though she's a mom, I think it's hard for people to perceive her as being exceptionally maternal. She doesn't come off as being super maternal to me anyway. I mean, I don't get that vibe from her. So, you know, that's probably why she didn't win. And then was she nominated for A Mighty Heart also? So she takes on these very heavy roles, you know, very emotionally charged roles. And, you know, unless she's playing either a seductress or a crazy person, it's just not believable because I think that's who she is. She's a crazy seductress. So, you know, one of the two.
Gun-toting.
Oh, yes. Well, you got to have the gun. Which is funny because, you know, here are these two people who are trying to spread, you know, their humanitarian efforts around the world about poor people here. And, you know, I just had somebody say, well, what about all the money they donated to, you know, revamp New Orleans? Look, when you think about how much money the two of them have, dropping $600,000 here and $1 million there, it's all part of their PR. They're not giving half of their fortune away to save the world. They're doing what they need to do to keep their name in the press and to deflect, again, from some of the negative attention they've drawn to themselves. And you're absolutely right. They're very smug, and I think that's what puts people off who aren't impressed with beauty. They're obviously very attractive people, but, you know, so what?
All righty. All right, well, let's, as usual, we blabbed quite a bit.
Yes.
On a few topics rather than spreading it around. But we tried doing this last time. We talked, too, and I don't think we got to it. You know, briefly, talking about our shows, our stories, boy, I'll tell you what, 24, I think this was really quite a good season. But, man, the two-hour finale, I don't know if there's ever been a finale that finaled less. I mean, everything was left open-ended. And, of course, you fell asleep, so
in the morning I'll do that.
So I suppose it's up to me to fill it in. But, I mean, nothing was resolved. The president's daughter, Olivia, you know, she got nailed. She was caught for setting up the murder of John Voight, speaking of Angelina Jolie, the John Voight
exactly.
character. Murdered him. He's a slime and a terrorist and a psycho, but nonetheless, she set up his murder. And although she tried to back out of it at the last minute, her actions led to him getting blown up. So she got caught. She got nailed. But we don't know what's going to happen. That it was just left open ended. That, you know, that was at the very end of the 2-hour show where she got caught. Her mother, the president, her father, the president's husband, were in total disagreement on what should be done about it. And the president, the mother, turned her in. wasn't going to bury the evidence. That's it. You know, you got to suffer the consequences for what you've done. I'll support you. I'm here. I love you. Blah blah blah. But man, you are nuked legally. So, but that's left open-ended. We don't know what happened. We don't know what's going to happen. You know, maybe we don't really care. Maybe that's not enough of a part of the storyline that we need to see, you know, the ultimate conclusion of that. But much more germane to the series itself is we've had Jack exposed to a pathogen, to a biological weapon, since about, I don't know what, halfway through the day, the longest day, and man, that is one long day. You know, we got Tony getting shot and beat and whatever.
But finding out that he's a super double agent.
He's a double, triple, quadruple. I knew they were going to flip that because they just made him so, so evil. He appeared so viciously, cold-heartedly evil since he turned from what we thought was an undercover role for the good guys, for the government, to being genuinely a terrorist on his own, wreaking havoc, murdering people left and right, including we saw strangle a FBI agent with his bare hands. So
that
in
the
last,
pretty vicious.
That was very vicious, very, very vicious. Unredeemable, I would say, on many levels. So anyway, in the final episode, right, I figured this had to have some kind of final reverse on Tony, because here's a guy who's been on and off all along, since I think the first year. I think he was in there. I think he was a trusted aide in that very first season. And he hasn't been on every season, but he's been on much of the time. And, you know, and he's probably the most beloved character on the series after Jack, certainly the longest longevity. And they were painting him to be just the coldest and vilest of the cruel, ideologue. Of course, we didn't know what his ideology was and why he was doing these things. But anyway, they reverse it yet again. I am doing all this not to kill people, but to save people. I'm under.
He wants to get to the leader of this covert rogue group of terrorists.
To get at the leader,
so he can break it apart.
So he could kill him.
He wants to kill him, right?
Because he killed his wife, Michelle, seasons ago.
And he killed Bill,
and lots of other people. But you know, smoking out this extremely elusive leader of this organization, and we ultimately don't even find out what their ideology is, other than that it appears that it was a network of private corporations that run private armies, essentially, contractors, and they had decided together, collectively, collusively, that they didn't like the direction the government was going, and so they're causing anywhere from between dozens and thousands of American civilian deaths simply to ultimately the plan was to create chaos, and then they would simply step in, and the American people would welcome these private armies. God, it sounds like the Revolutionary War, You got bring in the Hessians or something. So anyway, I was not super, super happy with the finale. And it's too bad, because I liked this season. I thought it had a certain internal logic that we haven't seen in some other recent seasons, and that it did hold together reasonably well for a show that, it's never going to hold together. There's just no way you can string out the layers of coincidences and sequences of events over 24 hours. And of course, there's the continuity issues. I mean, people suffering every manner
good,
of egregious injury and recovering within hours.
That's true.
That's just nuts. So anyway, I was not super thrilled with the finale of 24, which is too bad, because, like I said, I liked the season. We watched Reaper, which I guess we're about the only ones, we and like 9 other people, including my brother, because he's the one who told us about it. And, man, I'll tell everyone who listened, this season, I don't recall a show improving as much as that show has from season 1 to season 2. And
it's so good.
I just think, it's hilarious. It's a parody on... It's a really insightful parody on relationships, male-female relationships, male-male relationships, the bromance
father,
angle.
Father-son relationships.
Father-son relationships, that's right. I mean, and so poor Sam, for those of you who don't watch the show, he finds out that his father is, in fact, the devil, not the guy who he thought was his father, and the guy he thought was his father ends up in hell having... been not perfect in that
he died, but he went there to help Sam.
Right, he went there to help Sam.
Right, he wasn't sent there because he was bad.
No.
But he was killed.
Not bad. No, not a bad guy. And he was hilariously hanging around for several episodes, living in the deep freeze. In the garage, because he's a zombie. So anyway, it's really, really weird. And the relationships, there's human-demon relationships. And,
that
you
are
know,
hilarious.
Human-human relationships and demon-demon relationships. And then the devil, who is Ray Wise. And, man, talk about perfect casting. He's just hilariously, you know, he's a combination of dangerous and very suave.
Charming.
And he clearly has, you know, affection for Sam. But anyway, we got one more episode. I couldn't tell. It didn't seem like it was the season finale last night, Tuesday. But it turns out it was not. So I guess next Tuesday, is the season finale of that. And I'll tell you, I guess the ratings haven't been all that great, and it may not be back, which is really too bad, because it really is just an amazingly well-written show. And, you know, the first season focused more kind of on the formula, and the formula was, you know, Sam has to go around collecting souls and send them back to hell in service to the devil, but yet he justifies this in that he is in fact helping mankind by ridding it of these escaped souls who are evil. But became somewhat formulaic. But this year, wow, just a total difference. All right, well, we have shot past our 6:30. Yeah, we have as we always do, and that's fine. I think we covered quite a bit, and it was pretty interesting. And as always, I appreciate your checking in and chatting with me, Dawn.
You're welcome, and good luck in your next half hour.
Oh.
With Happy Cat.
Well, yes, that's fun to say, isn't it?
I know. All right, I'll see you soon.
I will see you soon, you know, probably on the self-same deck where you are hanging at this moment as we speak. All right, well, do we have the two Lisas with us?
Yes, I do indeed.
All right. Well, Lisa McKay is executive editor of Blog Critics, and she's out there on the East Coast. How you doing, Lisa?
I'm doing good, Eric. It's all kind of spring and nice here.
Yeah. Is it really warm there yet? Today was the first real warm day here.
It's pretty warm. We've got temps in the 70s and blue skies followed. You know, we've had like days on end of rain, so I'm just really happy to see the sun out.
Boy, no kidding. We see similar weather. Typically we get it here, and then you get it there about a day later, it seems like. But, yeah, it's sunny here. It's actually got into the low 80s here today, so it sounds like you may have even warmer weather in store with blazing sunshine. So, yeah, super, super nice day after we had this. I don't know if you were listening earlier, but we were all the way down in Nashville, and the weather turned over the weekend, and it was only in the 60s way down there.
Wow.
So that was bizarre. So do we also have Lisa Gus?
Yes, you do. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing good, and I think we're actually neighbors. I'm from Kentucky.
Are you?
So I actually know what you're talking about. It's gotten pretty warm here as well.
So are you in Kentucky now?
Yes, I'm in Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, how interesting. Now, you have an interesting accent. Where is that from?
Well, actually, I came to the United States from Uzbekistan 16 years ago.
Really?
And I think it's my wonderful, spectacular lack of musical ear that's contributing to my still having this nice KGB accent.
Well, I think it's a very charming accent.
Well, thank you, Eric, for a charming man.
Oh, heck, thanks. All right. Now what is your – how do we pronounce your blog critic name? Because, of course, your real name is – now, I saw an A in front of your name. Is your real first name Alisa?
Yes, it's Alisa.
Okay.
And it had been this – Alisa hadn't changed it when I came to the United States, and that's actually a funny story. I was the only Alisa in, you know, my school, which was huge, and probably in my city, which had about 2 million people. My mom was just really in love with Alice from Wonderland, and that's why she called me that. But just when I was born, we came out with our own version of Pinocchio. And the problem is the main villain in our version was called the Fox Alisa. So obviously, you know, in school, that was me.
Yeah. You became Alisa the Fox.
Exactly. Unfortunately, without, you know, the associated coolest of it all just at the time.
Now, what is your native language? Is it Russian, or is there something native to Uzbekistan itself?
Well, no. I mean, basically, we all spoke Russian then in USSR. So for me,
right,
it's natively Russian. But I would be able to find my way now in Uzbekistan, where they are now speaking exclusively Uzbek. In fact, they have an interesting idea. I'm not sure I particularly approve. They really wanted to move away from the influence of Russia, so but they don't know the Arabic script, and it's very difficult to learn. I tried. I completely failed, and I think a lot of people there did too. So now they're using Latin, basically English letters, to write out Uzbek words and using some of the Russian as well.
Interesting.
It's kind of strange. Looking, you know, at the buildings, I haven't been back, but a lot of people have, and taking pictures and videos, and just looking at the names of buildings, and it really throws you, just kind of reading it.
Kind of a hybrid, creating a hybrid language.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Is Philip with us now?
I am indeed.
All right. Well, Philip Nguyen, who is our chief geek, still deeply up to his elbows, knees, teeth, and his uvula in working on bringing up to date, I guess, or getting all the features up to form on the redesign, but also having to deal with, I guess it was just coincidental that Technorati decided, hey, let's move every freaking server to a whole other set of servers, and we've been caught up in the middle of that now for the last, I don't know what, week and a half or something?
Yeah. But look, it actually, the site looks beautiful, and I'm not just kissing up to my boss.
Oh. Well, we have little or nothing to do with the way it looks, but we like it too.
Lisa, it's delightful to talk to someone from Uzbekistan. I've actually got some friends who have lived in Tajikistan and are heading back to Tajikistan later this year. And just 2 weekends ago, I had a man from Turkmenistan stay in my home when he was here in Dallas the night before giving a seminar. So I'm delighted to expand my my exposure to the stands.
Well, you know what? Obviously, I cannot say that I like the fact that we are at war with Afghanistan, but at least now people know where I'm coming from. The moment I would mention Russia, it would be, so what? Is it where Siberia is? So I guess now the geography has been forced upon us a little bit.
You're right.
Yeah.
No, you're right. When you look at the map, you know, right there, kind of, what is it, north, east of Afghanistan, right there is Uzbekistan, right?
Actually, yeah, my dad, he traveled quite extensively at his job in Russia, in Uzbekistan, and he had, was right there at the border. He'd actually seen over the border. There's just a small river at one place, and that's where he had seen it.
Huh.
So it's kind of, obviously, it's as far as you can get from Siberia and still be in Russia, in USSR.
Now, where did the Assycat nom de blog critics come from? And is that how you pronounce it? We don't want to say it wrong. You know, it could be fraught.
No, actually, it's
fraught
quite
with danger.
Well, I actually came up with it 14 years ago. It was my very first nickname on American Online when I got on. And it's just in honor of and basically just about my cat. Her name is Masha. She came with me from Russia. And she is a Siamese, traditional Siamese cat. So it's Alisa, Siamese cat.
Got it. Aha. Uh-huh.
Very clever.
And is your cat still with you?
Yes, she is. She's gorgeous, and she's still around, and she's being just as species as ever.
So do you, like, pickle her or anything to prolong her life?
Well, basically, she's on organic food, and we're just trying to take good care of her, and, you know, we're kind of hoping she's going to be with us as long as possible.
How old is she?
Well, 19 now.
19? Well, my parents' cat is 19, too.
And basically, you know, she's lucky. She was almost lost in Cincinnati once, when we were just coming in. She was forgotten there at the airport.
Oh, my. Well, we've just been through Cincinnati twice, on the way down and on the way back. And actually, my son just about to graduate from University of Cincinnati. So,
congratulations.
We know it well. Oh, thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, let's talk about Lombardi Street. What is it? What's your involvement? What's happening? Sounds very interesting. I'm actually looking at the website right now.
Well, basically, it's kind of a first of its kind. It's a serialized drama intended to run basically simultaneously on the web through traditional network television, you know, crossover techniques like Zillion TV, .TV, as well as through Second Life. And how I got involved in it, well, because I decided to try out my hand at screenwriting. There was a competition announced for a screenwriter's job. And, you know, I got on, tried it. There was a very ferocious competition back in January and February. And having almost made it to the last round, I actually did not go through. The creator, Anthony Van Zyl, he's an award-winning playwright himself, and he knew that even though I could write, I could not write screenplays. I mean, as was true, I did not have experience. But he did like my ideas, and, you know, we kind of got to talking, and I had good suggestions and such. And, well, basically, it is revolutionary in that it offers an opportunity to everyone. And it, for me, it turns out I became a producer, second in command with him. So... it's
very interesting. Yes, there you are. There is your name. Well, Lisa McKay, I know you've probably done some preparation for this. So why don't you lead the conversation for a bit here?
Yeah, Lisa, one of the things that I found really interesting about the project is that you call it on the website a sort of a combination of a social networking site and a television production project. Mm-hmm. And that sounds immensely ambitious. I mean, I think either one or the other of those things alone would be a gigantic project. Tell us a little bit about the background of it and where you're intending to take it and sort of where you're with it right now, because I know you mentioned that the show is supposed to go into production in August. Is that right?
Well, actually, no, it's supposed to, early August is when it's going to start filming. We are already in pre-production. We are talking with 6 different locations at which we are going to be shooting. We are trying to be interesting in that we are going to be filming exactly the places that we are talking about. Basically, I'm sure you know how studios usually do the filming in one location and just make it look by planting a few trees around, like, for example, making it look like a forest, or, you know, trying to make it, you know, pass it off as Florida or something. Well, for us, we actually want to film it exactly where our characters are coming from, because everything that's going to be seen on the screen of your TV or the internet is going to be as real as possible. And we're going to be using local production crews, and we're going to be using local people for secondary roles, for extras, though obviously we are going to be casting the main roles and the largely involved secondaries through the site. Now, basically, as far as for the networking comes in, we want people to be able to be there, to meet up with other people from the same background, from the same sphere of interest, and you know what? If they happen to find opportunities to form their own production companies or find a job elsewhere, we'd only be happy for them. We actually want to promote traffic to our site through this, as well as to find, you know, a few good men and women to star and produce our show. If it happens to work out for other people interested in doing the same, well, the more the merrier.
Wow. So what's the response been on the website? Because I know that you've got a community set up and you're doing all of the casting and all of the recruitment for production folks through the website. How many people have, you know, beat a path to your door thus far?
Well, I can say that we have over 1,400 subscribers and we have over 20,000 visitors so far.
Wow.
And a lot of them are actually return visitors. Really, you're
wow.
Welcome to, anyone is able to come in. It's just the closed groups. That's where you need to be registered. So you definitely have usually on a site anywhere from 10 to 30 people browsing it. That's at any time.
So let me see if I can sort of understand a little bit about how this would differ from, let's say, a real-world television production. Are you going to allow the community via your website to sort of drive the direction that the stories go in, or do you already have sort of a planned plot development?
Well, basically, as you know, every television show right now is using poll groups. And in our case, we just want to have a lot more extensive slice of it. So any fan who's interested is welcome to go in, vote, make their opinions known. And just so long as it doesn't really, you know, if this fan has enough people agreeing with them, and so long as it doesn't actually affect our artistic integrity, we'll be glad to use their input, and we'll appreciate it. At the same time, we do have basic storylines, story arcs planned for our six main characters who are just coming in into college and beginning their college life from very different backgrounds. So what we're going to be doing is showing their progression to the 4 years of college and their relationships and the hardships they have passed. They're going to be meeting on the way to college they have had already, that we're going to be basically referencing back, and also what they're going to be doing once they're in college and in preparation to adult life.
Wow. That's really an ambitious project. Now, once you start filming, are you going to be showing new episodes weekly? How's it going to work?
Yes, definitely. It's going to be just as a normal show. First, we're going to start with the only difference is we're going to start with six minisodes that are going to be only available on the web to introduce the characters basically as an exposition, but it's going to be action. It's just to show where they are at the time that they are coming into the show. And we are going to end each minisode with them on the way, by plane, by car, I don't know, maybe by spaceship, heading to a college. And there, we're going to start airing, starting with the pilot. It's going to be a normal season of 23 episodes that are going to be available both via web and through TV. And finally, we are going to be at the same time producing other minisodes, referencing the secondary characters as well as, you know, their backgrounds. If, for example, you got interested in, well, you mentioned the fan participation. For example, you as a fan got interested in one of the professors, and we noticed a lot of interest, but we cannot really use the time on the show. Well, we're going to produce a minisode, exactly the same kind. It's going to be just as much. This is a high production level, but it's going to be focused on this character. So basically, we are going to be allowing ourselves to write a fan fiction. You know, for example, as Harry Potter or Buffy are alive because of the fan fiction writers. Well, here, everyone has a chance to become one, and if they're good enough, they're just going to film them and let it be shared with the world.
Yeah.
Of course, now in the case of Harry Potter and Buffy, originally what you had was incredibly, incredibly memorable characters that people identified with, wanted to be when they grew up or wished they were when they were younger, and then the fans built on that, taking the existing characters and writing new stories, new adventures for how they figured that those characters would act. How established are these characters going to need to be before the before general writers start to really even want to pursue fan fiction, do you think?
Well, obviously, we'd hope to get people invested as soon as possible. We do think that we came off with really interesting people. For basic, just one of them I could reference is Allison. She's not your regular college freshman. She's a French past. She's 33 years old, and she is just coming back to college. Now, we are just trying to get people interested as to why she would be doing that at this stage in life. What is she hiding? Why is she afraid of the police knocking on her door? And all of these questions obviously are not going to be answered in the first episode. However, if the people are interested in exploring why that might be the case, and you know, who her husband happens to be, and if it's close to what we have in mind, well, they're welcome to come up with their own explanations, and if it fits, they just might be the winners of our Minnesota challenge. We just had one for the Minnesota, as it happens. And all the Minnesota that we're going to be filming, all six, have just been written and have been chosen by a panel. And it's just from the site. Obviously, our head writers and the writers are going to be writing the pilot. And they are already. But the Minnesota have been written by the contestants. And that's whom we're going to be using. So we already have enough interest. We had 180 people trying to sign up for it, signing up for it, and we had over 60 different submissions.
That's really interesting. A couple questions that come to my mind are, A, how is this being financed, and kind of who's running the show here? Who's behind this in the first place?
Well, I can explain that. It's Anthony Van Zyl. It's his idea, his revolution, as he called it. He is actually an advertising professional. And what he came up with is this wonderful idea for advertising strategy. It has been around for a few years, but has been greatly underused. What it is, it's called video clicks technology, used through his company called SleepCat. And what it is it's going to be coded into each file. So if you mouse over anything, you're going to be able to get the information through judicious placement, product placement. So what it is going to be pool-based advertising. If you're interested, you're going to find it out. If not, you're just not going to be invaded. Your privacy is not going to be invaded, and you're just going to be able to watch the continuous show without interruption, as opposed to the traditional model. And as well, we are working with such charities as DoSomething.org, and such we're trying to get financing through big organizations whose causes we're supporting. And that we are calling the cause-based advertising, where we are going to be featuring a certain storyline very heavily in the show, through a sponsor. So, for example, we are actually in talks right now with Brandon Bond. He's wrote a piece for you on him. He's a world-famous tattoo designer, but he's also a big proponent of the pit bull rescue. And one of our storylines is going to mention dogfighting and the rescuing of the pit bulls. Now, we are in talks with him, and he's interested in actually coming in as a sponsor. So that's one of the ways we're going to be doing the financing.
Interesting. And where is the actual filming taking place of all of this?
Well, the Minnesota are going to be filmed on locations where the people are living right now. So basically it's San Francisco for one of the characters, for the title character, Gabriella Lombardi. It's in Midland, Texas for another character. It's Happy Camp, California for yet another. Bemidji, Minnesota, and Cincinnati, Ohio probably. And finally, it is going to be in Lowell, Massachusetts. Now, the college itself, we are actually still working out the details, but again, it's going to be entirely on location, featuring a real college, but chances are it's going to be Whitefish, Montana.
Wow. Well, you're certainly spanning the nation. So you're sending a crew to each one of those locations? It sounds very expensive, actually.
Believe it or not, it's not really, because we are getting a lot of support from the local community. Just now I spoke to people in San Francisco. They're really interested. As you know, Lombard Street is one of the famous landmarks in the United States and definitely pride and joy of San Francisco. Now, their supervisor, David Chu, is very interested in promoting it. So we are going to be filming right there, and we are going to get a lot of support from them as, through both production and catering and that sort of thing.
Very interesting. Now, are you assembling the crews in each of those locations? I mean, in other words, from that location, in other words, camera guys and so on and so forth, from that location itself, or are you having to send people to each of these locations?
Well, it's both. Obviously, some people we are going to be getting from there, like cameraman, for example, grips and such, but our directors might come from there. It hasn't been finalized yet. Might as well come from anywhere else. Currently, we have a slew of directors who are going to be filming basically one director for each episode, and it's going to be sort of like an audition for them. And the one or two who did the best work are going to be considered for a permanent director position for the pilot and beyond. As far as the actors go, obviously we are going to cast them. We are going to be doing very extensive casting starting practically next week. And those, except for the extras and the less known secondaries, are going to be flown in on location.
Wow, very interesting, and like Lisa, the other Lisa said, exceptionally ambitious. It's just, wow, it's almost overwhelming. It's certainly very interesting, and it is doubtless revolutionary, that's for sure. I certainly hope, I'm very interested to see how all this goes and hope it does well, because, you know, the more avenues and the more variety that we have, I think the better. Now, did you say you are going to be showing, are you hooked up with actual television, or is this going to be internet only? And I know you said you're also doing Second Life, right?
Yes, and we're also doing Zillion TV, .tv. It's basically a set-top box. Right now it's a perfect time for it. They just released a new version of the set-top box that's just going to be plugged into your internet, but it could be used as a normal box, a cable box, using a remote, so you just park your behind on a couch and watch it as a normal television. And right now it's really big. In fact, even the Blockbuster is starting to carry it these days.
How do you spell that box?
It's called ROCKU, but the services that are going to be working with us is Hulu TV and ZillionTV.tv. We're actually in talks with them to finalize at exactly what time it's going to start airing and such.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you've made a lot of progress, and you seem to have things very well planned out, considering you're leaving so much of it open-ended. I like that part, too. I think that's very brave of you.
Well, actually, that's apparently Anthony's idea. We do have problems, and one of them, for example, has been choosing a head writer. And one of the people that we're strongly considering is extremely professional, extremely smart, has done a lot of work elsewhere. But her idea was a lot more rigid. She was basically following in the rigids of current TV. But in our case, we do want a lot of input from the fans, and we don't want to limit ourselves to just our own vision. And hence, we had to part ways. But, you know, we're hoping that she does great, and we're still keeping in touch.
Well, the website, we should make sure to remind everybody, is www.lombardistreet. That's like the famous street in San Francisco, but with an I, lombardistreet.com.
Yes, thank you for plugging it. And they're growing very well. Right now, our Alexa rating has jumped 880%.
Very nice.
Thank you, yes. And Zeke seems to think so. We just recently had an article back there, and in less than 24 hours, we received 146 votes. So we are actually very proud of ourselves.
Yeah.
Sounds like you should be. This is like a pretty complex thing to pull together. And a great example of something that could only be done on the internet.
It is, and we are really liking it. Anthony and basically says how every student exec is probably shaking in their boots right now. I'm not sure that's the case, but we're definitely doing it without the studios, without the distribution, traditional distribution models. It's done, it's outsourced, it's distributed, it's done by people for the people, and, you know, so far we're doing good.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. We certainly would be interested in hearing how it's going down the line a little bit. It's just give us an update, let us know, you know, what's what and what the locations are, and obviously we'll want to refer people to the actual the episodes themselves, of course, once those have been shot and you start running them. So yeah, it's really very interesting stuff. And you said you're in Kentucky. Where are you in Kentucky?
I'm in Louisville, Kentucky.
Well, we stayed there Sunday night because, man, we just didn't feel like driving 500 miles from Nashville back to Cleveland. So we stopped in Louisville, which is a really nice area, by the way. I like it a lot. I've gone to the Derby a few times, and it's always a ball. That's really a nice – it's actually a very nice area. Very sort of cosmopolitan area. You, of course, have the feel of the South, but it's not only that either. You know, it's definitely a border state type feel as opposed to the deep South. It's a very interesting area and very pretty. And, yeah, we went through bourbon territory, and Don and I, and we were reading about it on the way because, you know, you're in the car and you're driving and there's not that much to do. And we both agreed how much we don't like bourbon.
Oh, well, I actually can't agree. I completely love it. It's my favorite drink. Much too.
Well, you're in the right place.
My dad is completely scandalized. I mean, I'm a woman drinking bourbon. I should be drinking sherry or something, but no.
or vodka, anyway, as far as your heritage goes, right?
Oh, no, he will skin me for that.
No, you wouldn't be allowed to do that either, huh? Yeah, bourbon. It's that smoky, the smoky oak barrels that gets me. It's too strong. It's a strong.
You know what
flavor.
We should try? We have our drink here that I tried. It's the most wonderful thing I ever tried. It's mead produced locally called at Cambridge Brewery, and sometimes it's brewed in a barrels of just in other normal barrels or the bourbon barrels, and both. Cases, mead is delicious. It's just the most amazing thing I've ever tried.
Well, my son, the archaeology major, who has spent a lot of time in Europe and who fancies himself a connoisseur of the Middle Ages, he loves mead too, man. He talks up mead all the time. So maybe I should have him visit you down there. You're not very far apart. He's in Cincinnati.
I'm actually going to Cincinnati probably on Friday if everything goes out as planned. So I might just look him up.
Yeah.
I'm going to be talking to Jungle Jims if we're going to be doing the filming there.
Very interesting. Well, I'll let him know that's going on. And I know he's super busy here in the last few weeks of school. He's got to finish up everything and write a bunch of papers and take tests and do all that kind of good stuff. He really wants to finish in style. He wants to go on and ultimately be an archaeology professor. And so, you know, he's got to continue with the academics. But if it's going on, you know, once school's out, then maybe he could possibly get involved even with it. He has a wide range of interests.
Well, we really appreciate his help. Definitely refer him to us. And, you know, congratulations on the graduation.
Thank you. Yes, it's very exciting. Now both of my older children will have graduated from college, so that is an accomplishment. You know, it's something you kind of take for granted. You can take for granted, just kind of assume it's going to happen. But, man, that doesn't mean it's not a lot of work and a lot of effort. And certainly I saw both my older kids you know, really grow and transform through their college years. And it is. It's a very exciting thing. We're certainly proud of him. He's going to take a year off and work in archaeology, so it's pretty cool. He already has a job. He was one of his professors asked if he was interested in participating. There's a government, federally funded national archaeological survey that they're doing, and so they need people with experience and knowledge to go out and do archaeology. So he's going to do that for a year.
Oh, I think it's going to do great for him, especially once he's choosing a graduate school, unless he's staying in Cincinnati.
Yes, absolutely. Well, he has a lot of experience already. He's done a lot of field work, considering he hasn't even graduated yet. All right, well, we are fairly well past the 7 o'clock hour. It is 7:05, so we should wrap things up and move on. But what a pleasure speaking with you, Lisa. Really interesting stuff. How did you end up getting – oh, I know. You said you were participating in the screenwriter contest,
yeah.
Right?
I didn't expect I would be anywhere, you know, up close to the top. I mean, I'm a fairly good writer. I know that. My novel has been really fairly well received, but, you know, I did not expect anything of the sort. But, you know, it's really working out great. And I'm
It sounds interesting. It sounds like you're really into it, and sounds like it's something that you really support and that you're very enthusiastic about. So certainly that counts for a lot. And, gosh, if it takes off, what a terrific position you'll be in, you know?
Yes, I know. I guess next, Spielberg should start quaking in his boots. Actually, he already is. As our media kit states, there is a quote by him, and he says that eventually we'll all be looking for, we'll all be looking for audience on the internet. I can look it up. The quote is great. You're definitely patting yourself on the back with it. But, you know, we'll see if he can supplant it.
All right. Well, good luck with it, and we'll certainly be interested in having an update down the line a bit.
Thank you so much, Eric. You definitely have it as soon as you're interested.
All right. Thanks. And
thank you.
Farewell, Lisa McKay, Philip Nguyen. How are you guys doing? Well, I hope.
Great. Great.
I couldn't hear you. Huh?
Superior. All right. Well, hope to talk to everyone soon. Listeners, have a great week, and we will see you next week at Wednesday at 6 o'clock on BC Radio Live. Farewell.
Thank you.